Welcome to the KRS Molecular Minute Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Shadi Nabhan. I'm the chairman of the Precision Oncology Alliance at KRS Life Sciences. The Precision Oncology Alliance is a very large network of institutions that collaborate on precision medicine data research with the ultimate goal of improving the outcomes of all patients with any type of cancer. Recently, we all attended the ASCO meeting in the beautiful city of Chicago, ASCO 2023. And as part of ASCO, there was a plenary presentation on rectal cancer labeled the PROSPECT trial. And the PROSPECT trial is a trial that attempted to investigate whether patients could omit the use of radiotherapy in certain circumstances. These patients were diagnosed with rectal cancer. So rectal cancer is a disease that is potentially curable when it is early stage. And to cure this disease in many patients, we often utilize neoadjuvant chemoradiotherapy. So patients undergo radiation therapy with chemotherapy, and this hopefully reduces the side effects, toxicities, improves outcomes, and improves the rates of sphincter preservation. And it appears that this trial is attempting to explore whether some patients might be able to safely omit radiotherapy by incorporating chemotherapy instead, such as the FOLFOX regimen, and exploring whether a response to FOLFOX might identify a population of patients that might not need radiotherapy. To explore the PROSPECT trial, I've invited Dr. Salma Jabour, a professor and vice chair of radiation oncology at Rutgers Cancer Institute, a member of the Precision Oncology Alliance. Salma is very active with ASTRO, is a phenomenal radiation oncologist. She is currently the chair of the Radiation Oncology Working Group of the Precision Oncology Alliance. And I've asked Dr. Jabour to explain to us the history of why the PROSPECT trial was even designed, why the question that we are having with the PROSPECT trial is even important, and what are the implications on clinical care for patients diagnosed with this disease. Also asked her to pontificate and tell us what she is looking forward in the future in terms of additional questions pertaining to rectal cancer for these patients. This was really such an exciting ASCO. It was amazing, energizing, with so many people attending in person and with a lot of groundbreaking studies and data. And I hope that you are able to subscribe to the show, rate it, refer friends and colleagues to the show, and always let me know what you think about the show by emailing me at cnabhan@krsls.com. Without further ado, Dr. Salma Jabour on the KRS Molecular Minute Podcast. Take our listeners to the KRS Molecular Minute Podcast through the trial design. And before we do that, a little about you, so that at least they know who's speaking to us.
Hi, my name is Salma Jabour, and thank you to Chatty for inviting me here today. It's really a pleasure and honor to be on this special podcast with you. My expertise is in GI and thoracic radiation oncology, and I am a professor and vice chair of clinical research and faculty development at the Rutgers Cancer Institute of New Jersey.
Great. So you made it to the plenary session at ASCO, not at ASTRO. Tell us about the PROSPECT trial.
The PROSPECT trial was carried out through the NCTN's Alliance Group, and this was also known as N1048. This study was launched in 2012, and it was a multi-center, unblinded, non-inferiority randomized trial. It compared neoadjuvant FOLFOX for 6 cycles with chemo radiation given only if the tumor did not respond to at least more than 20%. So the patients received chemo radiation if the tumor had less than a 20% response as evaluated by proctoscopy, or if FOLFOX was discontinued because of side effects. So really it was primarily FOLFOX, and only about 10% of patients ultimately ended up getting any sort of chemo radiation in addition to the FOLFOX group, in the FOLFOX group. And this was compared with chemo radiation therapy alone, followed by both groups receiving a low anterior resection with total mesorectal excision. In total, there were 1,128 patients, with 585 in the full FOX group and 543 in the chemoradiation group. And the primary endpoint of the study was disease-free survival, which was really a non-inferiority endpoint, and this was not significantly different between the two groups.
But Tamar, why was this trial even designed in 2012? Like, why did we even want to do that? Like, why was this an important question, I guess, for the medical oncology and the radiation oncology community?
Yeah, so I think there was a couple of reasons the study was probably being designed. At least, number one is the question of fertility preservation in young patients who get chemoradiation therapy. We know that particularly in women of childbearing potential, radiation will impair their fertility or make them infertile, so inability to bear children. And the use of chemotherapy alone would potentially prevent this long-term effect for many patients. So I think this was an appealing approach, and this was actually studied in a small pilot study at Memorial Sloan Kettering to look at the use of chemotherapy alone in the preoperative setting in a select group of patients with favorable risk rectal cancer, and was found to be successful with a very low rate of local recurrence. And I think this was really the major impetus for the trial. At this point, when many of these data were coming out, we had learned over the years, over the past 50 years, really, that there had been a transition more to preoperative therapy compared to postoperative therapy. And around this era, preoperative chemoradiation therapy had become a standard of care compared to postoperative chemoradiation therapy. I think the question of using chemotherapy earlier was also emerging as a reasonable approach, given that many patients were not receiving chemotherapy in a timely manner postoperatively. So I think the question was ripe for the picking, and looking at it from the perspective of reducing toxicity for the patient was potentially a burgeoning question at the time.
And, you know, in terms of toxicities that we were looking to reduce, mainly is diarrhea and what else? Like, what would you, when you counsel a patient who is undergoing preoperative chemoradiotherapy, what type of toxicities you discuss with them that they might expect in terms of short-term and long-term?
Yeah, so preoperative chemoradiation therapy is quite safe. Obviously, in the modern era, we use novel techniques like intensely modulated radiation therapy, or so-called IMRT. And the toxicities that we can still experience, the patient can still experience, include frequency or tenesmus symptoms of bowel movements, urgency, as well as urinary symptoms, potentially skin toxicity. And in the long term, as well as blood count. Obviously, the blood counts can be impacted by both chemotherapy, chemoradiation therapy. And in the long term, we are always worried about second malignancies, which are always a risk both with chemotherapy and with radiation therapy. We worry about bowel toxicity, bone marrow toxicity, or bone injury. So these are potential long-term toxicities we can see with radiation therapy.
So you mentioned, obviously, we're trying to reduce this, but it's not without trade-offs, right? Because you're adding FOLFOX to the other arm, which has its own toxicities as well, such as peripheral neuropathy and myelosuppression, I presume.
Absolutely. So the trade-off in seeing these excellent results in both groups in terms of disease-free survival, overall survival, complete response rates, which were all very similar between the two arms, we saw that the toxicity rates were quite different between the two groups, with the chemotherapy alone group, the FOLFOX group, having a much higher rate of peripheral neuropathy, especially when looked at in by clinician-reported outcomes in the New England Journal article. And we saw that those rates were above 80%, 80-85%, compared to the chemoradiation group, where toxicities like diarrhea were more common. But in general, the toxicity profile for chemotherapy alone with FOLFOX was a bit worse in terms of the number of toxicities compared to chemoradiation. in the companion journal article in the Journal of Clinical Oncology that looked at patient-reported outcomes. Patients had higher rates of anxiety, appetite loss, constipation, depression, dysphagia, dyspnea, edema, fatigue, nausea, neuropathy, and vomiting in the chemo group compared to chemoradiation, where diarrhea was higher. And in the long term, there were kind of worse outcomes with chemoradiation for fatigue and neuropathy, as well as sexual function. So it's, you know, there are trade-offs here, and potentially the neuropathy was higher in the chemoradiation group at the 12-month mark, because about 80% of patients receive chemotherapy postoperatively. So this could be an explanation as to why the neuropathy rates were higher postoperatively for chemo RT.
I have to say, I'm struggling a little bit in trying to understand the impact on clinical care, because like anything that we do in cancer care, there's always a trade-off in terms of deciding what type of side effects. So what we have here, if I'm hearing you correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, both arms are equally effective. There is no difference, because it was a non-inferiority trial. So there is not one is better than the other. If one is better than the other, it's a different story. But this is both are effective, equally effective. One, you can omit radiotherapy in some patients. The other, you don't. And it's really about side effects. So how is this practice changing? Because ultimately, you can discuss this with the patient, and the patient says, well, I still want to get the radiotherapy because you're not telling me that the other arm is better. You're just telling me I'm trading one side effect for another. No? Am I getting this right?
Yes. In this trial, which again was a very limited group of patients, right? It's a kind of earlier set of locally advanced patients, T2 node positive, T3N0, T3 node positive with less than 4 lymph nodes involved. So these are really a select group of patients. And so for this group, what they are trading is a toxicity profile. So potentially patients who might be of childbearing potential, they may prefer to consider the full FOX regimen as opposed to a chemo radiation group. If someone needs to potentially play an instrument for their livelihood, or the violin or the guitar or something where there's really kind of an importance to the dexterity, neuropathy may not be acceptable to those patients, and that could be a trade-off. So we have just differing toxicity profiles. But in the modern day, I would say that this trial may be less relevant in some ways, because in general, for many rectal cancer patients nowadays, we are moving towards a total neoadjuvant therapy approach where the majority of the therapy is really given preoperatively, as opposed to a preoperative and postoperative approach that was sort of used in this trial, where almost all patients, about 80% of them, did receive postoperative chemotherapy, regardless of the arm that they were in. So we really have moved more towards using chemoradiation and chemotherapy in the preoperative setting to maximally downstage patients and avoid surgery, which in and of itself presents another set of long-term toxicities for the patient in terms of bowel function. And we've really used kind of more of a neoadjuvant approach also to potentially avoid an abdominal perineal resection or a permanent colostomy. So I think it's really comes down to a shared decision making with the patient as to their wishes and the goals for their care. Are they interested more in a toxicity profile and the potential to avoid surgery? And this is really what it comes down to day in and day out in the clinic.
Yeah, very good point. But did they look at like MSI, microsatellite instability, stable disease? Or was that like, did they have any correlative to try to look at some of these things, or this was not part of the trial?
No, these patients would have predated the era of immunotherapy for rectal cancer, rectal cancers that are MSI high. And so we don't have that data on these patients as to if any proportion of them may have had microsatellite instability. And so maybe this will be the topic of future subgroup analyses.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, the trial has been for 10, 11 years until its report, and the field has moved on to a lot of new things. So, for example, what we were highlighting to our listeners is that how MSI-high patients do respond very well to immunotherapy. So now you take that information and you need to apply it in the context of this trial that was presented at the ASCO plenary session. Have you thought through this along with your colleagues, or is this something for future investigation?
Well, I suspect obviously some of these patients may have had microsatellite instability, and we know that those patients can respond very well to chemoradiation. So we don't know, obviously, in the PROSPECT trial how to look at that subgroup quite yet. But in the day-to-day of clinical practice, we do account for this. I think the paradigm shift to consider immunotherapy, especially in a young patient who wants to avoid toxicities of surgery or radiation, maybe considering to give immunotherapy if they do test, if their tumor does test to be MSI high. I think that this would be something we would incorporate in day-to-day practice, obviously, in our consideration for the patient's recommendations.
Salma, I know that we're short on time, but there's just a couple of questions I have. Like, you know, in terms of the this trial, the field of rectal cancer, what are the top questions now that you are trying to tackle, you know, moving forward? What kind of trials are ongoing for rectal cancer patients that you really are interested in their outcomes, looking forward to know what they show right now?
So again, I think the field has really moved in this into the setting of a total neoadjuvant therapy approach, or the so-called TNT approach. And with that, there is an ongoing trial through the NCTN, the so-called JANUS trial, that looks at intensifying systemic therapy, as was done in the Protege Unicancer 23 trial, to look at FOLFIRINOX or FOLFOXIRI as opposed to FOLFOX. So using an intensified chemotherapy to potentially better downstage patients and to result in higher complete response rates with avoiding surgery or using a non-operative management approach. So these are really kind of, this is one of the burning questions in our field right now. I think another question would be around how best to predict which patients would be able to avoid surgery, potentially using radiomic features or other molecular features, ctDNA, to better guide our treatment approaches. So I think that really trying to personalize the therapy, also trying to follow the patient's goals in their therapy, these are really what we want to be focusing on in the future.
From radiotherapy technique, or the technology of radiotherapy, and that's my last question, just from a radiation oncology technique, how you deliver, anything happening from the technique, equipment, things like that pertaining to delivering radiotherapy in rectal cancer that might obviously have an impact, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing to highlight, going back to the PROSPECT trial, is that we really don't know what proportion of patients was treated with the more modern technique of intensely modulated radiotherapy. And we know that this technique has the ability to better spare bone marrow. It may spare patients more diarrhea, or reduce the rates of diarrhea, at least from several retrospective series. So we do know that modern techniques can improve the toxicity profile of therapy. And with that, we also have newer techniques such as MRI guidance that are being looked at to potentially dose escalate the dose to the tumor. This can also potentially have an effect in terms of the tumor response using radiation, as well as other approaches like brachytherapy have regained interest in terms of rectal cancer treatment, other ways to potentially get that tumor to disappear and approach the patient non-operatively.
So basically, don't worry, you're going to still be employed as radiation oncologist. Radiation oncology is going nowhere, right? Because somebody was saying that, you know, that's it, we're done with radiation therapy. We're still stuck with radiation therapy.
Perhaps. If we cure cancer, we'll all be really happy. So either way, I think we would be happy radiation oncologists. I think one thing to highlight from the PROSPECT study is the extremely high rates of 5-year overall survival, which I think is kudos to the authors in demonstrating these really excellent outcomes in terms of very low local recurrence rates at 2%, or under 2%. And again, these really outstanding disease-free and overall survival rates. So we're doing something right for these patients. And I think we have to continue this trend to continue to improve the outcomes for this group of patients who can benefit from chemo or radiation or both.
Well, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for visiting with me, Dr. Salma Jabbour, on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shadi. Nice to talk with you this morning.
Okay, folks, thank you so much for listening to the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. This is your host, Shadi Nabhan, and I would appreciate if you subscribe, rate the show, and refer your friends and colleagues to the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. Thank you so much for Dr. Salma Jabbour for sharing her insights about the PROSPECT trial that was presented at the plenary session of the ASCO 2023 meeting. Until next time, take care.